This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Sailing frequencies open, sir.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the next edition of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hoffman. What you're about to hear was recorded moments, mere moments after the world premiere of Episode 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery, which, if you are a hardcore listener of the show, you just watched yourself. We just launched this podcast to go with it. Week to week, we're going to have recap episodes of Discovery with Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Jordan.
But when I was in L.A., my good friend Adam Drozin, who is at Adam Drozin, D-R-O-S-I-N, I may have gotten that wrong, is a super hot Star Trek fan and a great guy. So what we did, as you'll hear, is we just peeled away from the premiere, found a quiet corner, or relatively quiet corner, and talked about what we saw, and also ordered food. Brian, you're going to hear what Adam and I ate that night when you listen to this. He got something kind of gross. So we'll see. So that's the deal with that. But listen, I want to tell you, if you were listening to this podcast, clearly you have an interest in Star Trek. There's a possibility that you haven't yet signed up for All Access. Maybe you're on the fence. So allow me to read to you a brief statement, and it goes a little something like this. Space, the final frontier. Before Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise, there was Discovery. Now, one of the most iconic and influential global franchises returns to Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access. The show's premiere will be live, as you know, on September 24th at 8:30, 7:30 Central on CBS. Then stream episode 2 immediately afterwards exclusively on CBS All Access. It's the new thing. Streaming television. It's the wave of the future. New episodes will be available every Sunday. Subscriptions to All Access start at $5.99 a month, which in addition to Discovery gets you access to other number one hit shows, classics, movies anytime, anywhere. You can also stream your live local CBS broadcast for news, special events, Thursday and Sunday night football, other sporting events, and more. So try CBS All Access for free now at cbs.com/Star Trek. That's cbs.com/Star Trek. So if you go in through that portal, cbs.com/Star Trek, you get a week free to kick the tires on it and then keep it, and then keep it through Discovery's run. If you don't like it after the Discovery, you can get rid of it. It's it happens sometimes.
And you have absolutely nothing to lose by trying it.
Nothing to lose by trying it. The first week is free. There you go. So that's the deal. Let's now kick it over I've been in a whirlwind. I'm sorry to be speaking to you on the phone. Brian, the engineer, is a whiz, so he'll make it sound as if it's as crystal clear as possible. But I literally just got back from Los Angeles. I'm running around like a crazy person. And now Star Trek is here. Discovery is here. Michael Burnham, Lieutenant Saru, all these interesting things that the scene when she's in the brig. Brian, didn't the brig look like Tron?
Yes, it did.
I'm glad you say that. All right, let's kick it back, and then the next time will be me and Brian talking about episode 3. All right, live long and prosper.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Engage, the Star Trek, official Star Trek podcast. We're in warp 103 right now. We just got out of the world premiere of the first two episodes of Discovery. I'm here with Adam Drozin, who's been on the show before. He is, we got to give you official title at this point. I don't know what to call you. A mega fan. How does that sound?
Sounds all right to me.
A mega fan who lives here in L.A. Just to kind of give you a little a sense of where we are, we're in a strip mall near the Arclight Theater where the Cinerama Dome is. We're like, you know, a block away, and we're in like a pretty crappy, well, I shouldn't say that too loudly, but we're in like a sports bar, but it was not as loud as the other bars around here. It's called Big Wang's. Is Big Wang's a chain here in L.A.?
As far as I know, this is the only Big Wang's in Los Angeles.
The only Big Wang in Los Angeles. So I'm drinking a Coors Light. And Adam agreed to come and sit and chat. And what's funny is that across the street, I can literally look out the window of Big Wang's and I can see the Dream Hotel. And on the top floor of the Dream Hotel, which I can see, I'm not kidding you, is where the big after party is. And we are not there because we're talking to you. And the big after party is Les Moonves, the president, Lord Dominion of CBS, and the cast is there. I'm sure Sonequa is looking beautiful as she did on the red carpet, and some of the other cats from the older show. Whoa, that is a big beer.
Did not see that coming.
I got a Coors Light in a bottle. You got a Franciscaner Weiss beer, and it is like a fishbowl. That's got to be like 2.5 beers.
I'm not much of a beer drinker, guys, but when you're at Big Wang's, that's what you do, I suppose. Dear Lord.
All right. So Adam and I really haven't talked about our thoughts yet about the show. But what was funny is just a minute, he's like, who did you talk to on the red carpet? And I was thinking about, I think Sonequa was wonderful on the red carpet. And I was just thinking back to the red carpet, how I did not get a chance to speak to Anthony Rapp. And I really wanted to because, you know, he follows me on Twitter and I, you know, we're pals. And then I realized he wasn't in the show.
Yeah.
We didn't see him at all.
He was exclusively on the Discovery, it seems, which we did not see.
Yeah.
And he was great on the red carpet. Our friend Jim Morehouse, who was interviewing him for TrekCore.com, they were talking about Anthony's latest obsession with the Star Trek novels.
Yeah, he is going above and beyond in his research. It's so cool.
Very eloquent about it, and it's great to see someone with that kind of taking that passion for his work, taking it off screen in his time that he doesn't have to commit to the show. It's very impressive.
Yeah, he's a cool, cool guy. If you don't follow Anthony Rapp on Twitter, I think is he just his name, or is he like the real Rapp or something?
No,
or?
He is at Albino Kid.
Right. Oh, of course, he's at Albino Kid. Because he's a very pale man. All right, so Dig, I want to talk to you, Adam, broad strokes, what you love the most, and then we could talk about any, you know, misgivings you had. I'm assuming that you liked it.
I liked it very much.
Okay, cool. I'm going to start off and say the thing that blew me away immediately was, and I'm going to make a bold statement. I'm going to plant a flag right now here. Star Trek Discovery has the best opening title sequence in any Star Trek.
It's very striking. It reminds me of... I'm about to reference a video that's referencing other things, but it's the first thing that came to mind is the music video for Franz Ferdinand, Take Me Out, which is very sort of using like German sort of Weimar Republic illustrative... white cream on red on black. Very cool design elements. Seeing the phasers and things come apart. I was very taken with it.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to see it again immediately. I should point out that, you know, a lot of times, I mean, as listeners know, and as you know, Adam, I my main gig is I am a film critic, and when I go to see something that I'm going to write about to review, I take notes. I did not take notes tonight. Because I just kind of wanted to enjoy it, and I know that I'm going to see this again on Sunday when the rest of the world sees it, and kind of have more cogent thoughts then. But yeah, the opening credits, which did not come immediately. There was a little pre-titled sequence, as there often is on television. And then it just came in with these very elegant, simple line drawings, and just things kind of swooping in. And you can see like a blueprint of the ship. That's the first thing you see, is the ship being drawn as a blueprint, and then it moves. And then you see a blueprint of a phaser, and then you see kind of like half of, I guess, Michael Burnham's face or somebody's face. I don't know. And it's something that I want to see again, but it just was really, really, really cool. But the thing does start with a pre-title sequence, and I've got to be honest with you, a pre-title sequence wasn't like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, the cold open's a tricky thing to nail, especially with a series intro. I mean, thinking about back on it, Broken Bow is a really strong cold open.
Yeah.
That was our last one. Which, you know, also had a bit of a flashback into it. But, it was great to have. I think it's a really bold statement to start the first piece of audio and visuals you see as, in Klingon, subtitled Klingon.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, this is, by the way, this episode is, we can go in with all the spoilers. This is after it's been aired. So, yeah, the first thing you hear in Discovery is clock, truck, truck. You know, it's Klingon, which just made me laugh. It's like, goddamn, good for them, you know? And then it gets to Burnham and Giorgio. I don't know exactly what they were like, fixing a well? What were they doing?
They were setting up each other's relationship is what they were really doing.
You know, and I'll be honest, when I'm watching it, my head was spinning so much. First of all, I got up at the crack of dawn this morning. Did I say that already yet on the podcast?
Not yet.
Okay. It's now, like, it's around 10 p.m. L.A. time. I woke up at what would have been 2 a.m. L.A. time, 5 a.m. New York time, to get on a plane to come here and run and do the red carpet and record audio in the blazing sun. And then when I finally sat down, and there's all this, like, Star Trek luminaries around me. As I'm walking in, I see John Delancey. He's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, Q, you know, what the hell? And then Bob Picardo was there, and I had, talked to Sonequa, and she's so charming, and Mary Chifo. And then I sit down, and the lights dim, and there's an intro. You know, Alex Kurtzman came out, and everybody came out and took a bow. And it was really, and Sonequa said some very, charming things. And then it started, and, like, my mind was, like, racing a mile a minute. Like, I was like, holy shit, this is actually happening after all this time. And then I'm like, wait, what are they doing? Why are they walking around in the desert? What's happening here? So there was, like, some eggs that needed water, and they shoot a hole in a well. Like, they had to do that? They couldn't send somebody?
I do really appreciate just that, on a face value, the first alien species that we have in Discovery is the Crepusculans.
Is that what they're called?
They're called the Crepusculans.
What is your source for that?
She says it. I think Georgiou says it.
Oh.
And this is also, it was on a piece of art in the Discovery exhibit that they showed at San Diego and in Las Vegas.
Yeah, these are like the larva creatures.
Yeah.
They're called the Crepusculans.
I forget the piece of dialogue exactly, but apparently there's a drought and they tap this well. Very, there didn't seem to be any concern for violating the Prime Directive, considering they blasted the well in view of the Crepusculans, who pop out immediately after they leave.
Well, but no, they were in, like, their larval state.
They were
in hibernation.
Oh, okay. I guess that's true. And then I guess...
But then one came out.
The sound of it popped them off, or...
Maybe that's what it was.
But true. Then they also, like, I mean, the storm was coming. Maybe that woke them up. But then they also just have the ship come through the atmosphere and pick them up with a huge delta on the ground. So I think the delta was more for the image of it, and they reverse engineered that scene.
I 100% agree. It was a cool, like, it gave me a chill.
Yeah,
when she's like, I sent them a beacon or whatever, and you see the Delta shield. But it felt, I gotta say, I loved what we saw tonight.
Yeah,
this was my least favorite thing, was this little prologue. I feel like I felt the fingerprints of Alex Kurtzman on
interesting
that sequence.
Sure.
It definitely felt like from the makers of The Mummy.
Oh boy.
A little bit. But then we get into the awesome, awesome title sequence, and then it just kicks off. And I'm telling you, we were not on the bridge of the Shenzhou for 30 seconds, and I'm like, this is Star Trek.
Yep.
This is like all these worries of, like, is it canon? Is it prologue? Is it sidequel? Is it sequel? It felt like, even though with very modern cinematography and modern production design, it felt like Riker and Picard or Kirk and Spock, like, seeing a problem and talking it out. And instantly, I love the relationship between Georgiou and Michael Burnham, and especially Saru, who was instantly lovable, like instantly iconic First of all, I didn't know he clucks his teeth or he chatters his teeth. What does he do exactly?
It registered like a click, but it seemed to be the kind of thing he would click when he was thinking and about to like say his piece, and like it made me think of him processing, and he has his little fibers that come up on his neck when he's sensing things.
Yes, when he senses fear.
He's great. And I think the thing that's really impressive about Georgiou to me is how easily she establishes her command style without a lot of show. And I mean, you know, we look back at the captains we love, like Sisko and Kirk and Picard, and their command style is so codified, having seen, you know, these episodes over and over again. But Georgiou comes on, and she's very much her own captain, and she doesn't have to, you know, be brash or, you know, in your face about it. She's Georgiou, and she's got her style. I really responded to that.
Yeah, no, she definitely has her style. She's tough, but she is thoughtful. Like, at first, when Burnham comes back from sickbay, and her instinct is like, get the hell back to sickbay. But when she senses Burnham is like, no, you really have to listen to me. She kind of swallows her pride a little bit and says, okay. When Burnham tries to do it a second time and belays an order in front of the rest of the crew, that's a no-go. And she does not like that at all. No. And then I was surprised. I gasped when Burnham gave her the Vulcan grip.
That was really
Vulcan
heavy.
Vulcan pinch, excuse me.
That was great.
I believe I said something to the tune of, oh, snap. My apologies to the people sitting next to me, but that was unexpected and really, really cool. What was your favorite thing in what we saw?
On a gut level, I really just responded to the spectacle of it. I mean, this is truly the most cinematic Star Trek pilot we've seen by far. I think the ease with which we're seeing these actors slip into the world is impressive. People have made the comparison before that, and the performers themselves have, that acting in Star Trek's almost like Shakespeare, and the fact that it's very heightened and very specific in the world that they're portraying. And I feel like it is really specific, and I think they all really nail it in a very facile way. For me, the thing that I was really struck by was how, to use a comic book term, how decompressed the episode felt. It really didn't occur over that much time, but it felt like so much was happening. It felt so dense.
Yeah. One thing that was weird, there's like a good news, bad news of how we saw it tonight. The good news that they showed it at the Dome is that like it's good for press because they had the press there and it was like a big event tonight. You know, and it was the event in L.A. tonight. The production value and the cinematic-ness of it, like the Dome was like the biggest theater in LA, and it handled it. Like it this show defeated the Dome, right? It did not look small. I mean, you show a TV show in a movie theater and you're like, it's a TV show, you know, you could tell. The scenes of her flying out among the asteroids, that whole EVA sequence was dynamite. I think all the battle action was really cool. I was very impressed by all of that. The only negative, and it's not a negative for the show, negative for our experience tonight, not even a negative, just like an odd thing, was when it ended, because it did not, there was no mark for end of episode 1 into 2 that it flew it right in. I had no idea what time it was because it was not a three-act structure because it wasn't a movie. It's 2 episodes of a TV show. And really, it's a prologue to like episode 3 is like, oh, now what? You know, this big thing happened. What's the redemption arc now? So it's kind of like what we saw was act 1 of a movie. As a theatrical event tonight, I was completely disoriented, so I didn't know whether to applaud at the end until I realized, oh, that was the credits for all of it. I've been sitting here for 2 hours. But that's a testament to how good it was because it zoomed by. I was not bored for an instant. And it just was very disorienting. It was sort of a weird experience.
It really did move. It did have an urgency to it, and it felt economic in a way. It didn't really feel like there was too much fat on the bone. To use I remember Ridley Scott said this about Alien once. He's like, there's no fat on the bone. It's just pure lean muscle, just moving forward. And I really did respond to that aspect of it. I think Jeff Russo's music was really nice. I mean, the theme song we've been talking about is really strong and evocative, but coming off of the Berman era in which he himself had referred, I shouldn't say he himself, I can't think of a source for that, but I feel like the consensus is that Berman didn't want the music to melodically intrude on the drama, and it's been sort of called musical wallpaper, and
right,
I feel like
right.
this is not that.
There's no, it's really good.
There's a real character and, and flavor to it, and I think it's something that people talked about with regards to the Orville, which just premiered recently too, is that having a full orchestra performing music for television really does add something, especially when you have a strong composer with a strong musical mind behind it. His music was definitely another highlight of this for me.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what's funny is that there aren't, like you say, it was kind of decompressed and it felt like there was a lot going on. Interestingly enough, though, there are very few locations. Right? I mean, there's the main bridge of Tacuma's weirdo ship, whatever the hell that thing is called.
I think it's informally been called the sarcophagus ship.
The sarcophagus ship. Then there's the bridge of the Shenzhou. There's the brig, which looks amazing, by the way. It looked like Tron.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It was so cool.
Welcome to the grid.
Yeah. And then there was an instant we see Burnham's quarters. And then we see Giorgio's ready room. But that was like, I didn't get a handle on Burnham's ready room. Felt really big.
Burnham had a very interesting...
Not Burnham. Giorgio.
She had some interesting, I would assume, Chinese-inspired artwork on her walls and behind her desk, and it was really nice. And Burnham in her quarters had, like, a cool triangular Vulcan piece of ornamentation, and it had a very small itik on it in the bottom part.
I did not catch that.
Yeah, it was very, very subtle. And other than that, her quarters were very Vulcan, very sparse.
Yeah. I love in the flashback when she's wearing that red tunic or whatever the heck that was. That was really neat, and she's so Vulcan at the beginning. And then we see the transporter room, which I wanted to talk about because the transporter room looks very, very different, and there was like a line of dialogue that kind of explained that away. Burnham says, I thought you've done away with vector style, va-va-da-va-va-da-va-va-da.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Yeah, and then Georgia was like, the Shenzhou is an old ship, but she still gets around.
That's right.
That's why our transporter room looks different, tough guys. That explains that. It does not explain...
Roger Waters' gong from Live at Pompeii in the background.
Wait, what? Oh, man.
That's what's powering it, power of prog rock.
The power of prog rock. Oh, man, it did look like that gong. But no, it doesn't explain the new, and this is like, listen, I have no time for fans who want to flip out about, you know, if this is set during TOS, it should look like TOS. Like, I'm done with that argument. But it is interesting that they have this cool holographic type of telecommunication that we never see again. Like, that's just different, and fans just have to... Star Trek fans tend to be very logical. That's why we like Spock. And it is a canon breach. There's no two ways about it, Adam. It's a canon breach.
They breached it, baby. And
are you ready to accept this canon breach?
I've accepted it in my heart. And if you haven't, the only thing I can say is you need to take a piece of advice from Steve Winwood and roll with it, baby.
Yeah.
You need to roll with it. I think it's fine.
It's totally fine. But
listen, if you
want
to get hung up on these little minutiae of this is supposed to predate something that was made 50 years ago, that you're more than welcome to it. For me, if Star Trek's going to exist, I just want it to be good. And if they're going to have to take liberties, let them do it. Just make sure it's well written and well produced.
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest red flag of a canon breach, and... because they use it a lot. It's like 4 or 5 times they use it.
Yeah.
And it was different, and that's that. I totally am fine with it. I liked it even. It looked cool.
It's
a modern show. It's 2017. It's going to be 2018 next year.
I like that they thought it out, like the technology, just like he moves to sit down on her desk and he glitches out a little bit. Like, it's not perfectly smooth technology.
No, it's not smooth. Maybe that's
cool.
Why Kirk didn't use it.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The other thing that it's going to take a little getting used to is James Frayn's version of Sarek. He's really snarky.
Sardonic, yeah.
Yeah, really. Oh, we should tell him about the special thing we saw at the beginning.
Oh, my gosh, guys. So I was sitting next to Aaron from TrekCore.com, and he had made a comment before the screening has started, but after the gentleman who was emceeing had left, he's like, they didn't mention anything about the... embargo because it's been noted in the press that prior to Sunday's premiere that no one is allowed to write their review or publish a review.
Yeah.
But
I got about three emails reminding me. Yeah.
But there was, you know, in the invitation to tonight's event, they said, you know, there are certain things, please do not, spoilers, plot points, etc. You cannot let this out. And they didn't mention any of that. But before the episode actually started, we got a shot of James Frayne in character and costume.
On the deck of the Discovery, by the way.
That's
the only
right.
time we saw the Discovery was in the special thing.
That's right. In character, talking right to camera, saying, I know you're excited. That's a very emotional human response. Please do not tweet out anything.
He said, it would even be logical to share this with your social network.
That's right.
However, do not. And it was cute. He did not break character. And then he said, and for those of you who are compelled to take video, we have some guards. And then a spotlight went on the door. And there were two dudes dressed like Klingons with batlets.
Yes.
Which was a hoot. You know, got a big laugh.
These were Discovery Klingons. So one was more brownish, one was more grayish, and they looked great. These were, I wouldn't say screen quality prosthetics. I saw them right up close. They were definitely pullover masks that they were, the seams were painted into.
I'm sure they had this idea about a day and a half ago.
But they looked good, They looked really good.
It got a big laugh, and it got the point home. The other, just getting back to that earlier point about the locations, we do see a little bit of Vulcan school.
Yes.
And that reminded me a heck of a lot of Star Trek 2009.
Yes.
Because they're in these little, I don't know, divots.
There's
little pods where, like, you go to school in, like, a little hole in the floor. And it was a nice way to, like, work out. You get, like, two bits of plot exposition at once. A, she was schooled on Vulcan. B, her parents were killed by Klingons, you know, a la Worf. And, you know, she was taken in by Sarek. And she's referred to by Sarek as my ward, which I thought was nice. Sort of downplaying the San Diego Comic-Con,
my stepdaughter's my daughter.
Yeah, it went from daughter, Sarek's my father, to, oh no, he is the ward. Should we order food right here on the podcast?
Yeah, hey.
Can we order some food from you?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get one of those build-your-own pizzas.
Okay.
And I'm going to get it with jalapenos and pepperoni.
Okay.
And garlic, can I get garlic on there too? Let's do it.
Okay, garlic, jalapenos, pepperoni.
Yeah.
Can I please have an order of cheeseburger fries?
Yes.
Wait, what are cheeseburger fries?
It's basically loaded french fries. So it's like almost poutine.
Ah, oui. All right, awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
What was your name again?
Elliot.
Yes.
All
right, nice to meet you, Elliot.
You too.
So long. All right. Elliot's going to bring us some pizza and cheeseburger fries. Yeah. Adam's going to be vomiting all night. Cheeseburger fries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. do you think she knows E.T.? Is that the same?
I was going to say, we just saw a show with Michael Burnham was a woman, and Elliot was certainly gave every appearance to being a woman.
Very gender nonconforming, guys.
Yeah, you know. You know, it's funny. In L.A., I guess people just record podcasts in bars all the time.
Yeah. Listen, we're on, what is this, Vine?
Is this downtown L.A.?
We're no, in Hollywood. This is Hollywood.
We're in Hollywood.
We're in Hollywood proper, and I got to... Just if you guys haven't been to Los Angeles or Hollywood, the streets are truly lined with gold, and people record podcasts in restaurants called Big Wangs.
You know, I took a little walk earlier, and I did see some of the stars, the Walk of Fame. And I like to think I know a lot about history and Hollywood history. It was like one name after them, like never heard of this guy, never heard of this guy. They were mostly musicians. I figured, it must be some country musician I never heard of. And then, like, I did see, like, and then, like, oh, that's a biggie. It's like, so five people I never heard of and Marlene Dietrich.
Yes.
I'm like, that's no joke. Of like, Marlene Dietrich's, like, a pretty big name of classic Hollywood. I'm like, she should be in a very prominent spot. And then I looked up. It's in front of a Popeye's fried chicken. I'm like, come on. Marlene Dietrich deserves a little more than that.
There's a fascinating culture behind the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I think it costs... It used to cost $10,000 flat just to get the star. I think it probably costs much more than that now, and you have to pay a fee to maintain it every year.
So Marlene Dietrich is no longer with us, so her estate
would do it.
I guess you have to do it, right?
Yeah.
Because you got to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Who would Dietrich play if she was in Star Trek? Would she play an alien? Like a very, like, cold...
She would play the young Marlene Dietrich? I guess maybe one of Mudd's women?
Yeah. She would be an amazing Loxana. Older Dietrich would be an amazing Loxana
Troi. Yeah. Like the the Touch of Evil era Marlene Dietrich as Lux.
The sultry sort of Grand Dame Dietrich would be a great Mira Troy. Mira Loxana Troy.
All right. So, you know, there's one thing we didn't really talk about, and that is not the character, but the performance of Sonequa Martin-Green. And I think it was very, very strong. I loved her immediately. Even in that prologue, which has some pretty... The dialogue is pretty chunky in that little prologue scene. But once you get back on the bridge of the ship, I thought she was doing pretty damn well.
You could really feel them shaking the rust off, like kicking the tires. Like, this is Star Trek, right? We're making Star Trek. Like, that's what the dialogue felt like in
the beginning.
Opening.
Yeah, a little bit.
But she really, I mean, I personally, this is the first thing I've seen her, and I know she has quite a fan following from her work on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I thought she was very strong. She was making some strong choices. She had a lot of agency. I'm really looking forward to seeing, like, you know, the way this episode is structured. We just got a little dollop of the sour cream of her backstory in the burrito of this episode, to use a really colorful metaphor. But, you know, we haven't seen her relationship with Sarek beyond the Vulcan Student Academy.
Right.
We have only seen her in the context of being very Vulcan as a teenager, as a young 7 years ago, but also as an emotional child after this trauma, and then as an emotional young adult, I would presume to say, in her dealings in the quote-unquote present of the episode. So I'm very curious to see, as her backstory is filled out and as we go back and forth in time, to see how she went from this girl who went through a huge trauma to being the renegade hero of the saga.
Right. I mean, the implication is, like, she came to Vulcan, you know, crippled by the trauma, then became a perfect daughter, a substitute daughter for Sarek as the ultimate Vulcan, and then went too far by, you know, she, you know, Spock used to disobey orders all the time too. I mean, think of the menagerie, right? So Spock never knocked Kirk out with a Vulcan pinch, but he did knock out Bones at the end of Wrath of Khan.
That's true.
So, you know, he got to do what he's got to do. I just thought, like, her performance was solid. It's really good. I mean, she's got a very interesting face. She, like, the scenes where she had to, like, stand up and kind of yell a little bit, I was like, yes, you know, like, and the scene where she's in the brig and she's trying to outsmart the computer to let it
very
let it
Kirk
space jerk. Yeah, she did this space jump, was very Kirk outsmarting a computer with logic.
That felt very Kirk.
Yeah, it was
knowingly, like, very subtly, but knowingly, like, this is a Kirkism. Yes.
Yeah, no, that was some smart stuff. So I really dug her.
Let's talk about the Klingons for a second, if we could. Because that was another highlight for me. Her, the music, the Klingon culture.
Yeah. I got to admit, again, as I said earlier, my mind was racing at first because today has been nuts for me. That I kind of was like, it was so emotionally overwhelming to be here watching this show. I know it's embarrassing to admit that I almost didn't comprehend what was happening at first. I'm like, what? What is going on? So, you know, but I ultimately understood the plot, but it's wild. I mean, I heard that they were only doing it in the Klingon language, and you hear that, and that's one thing, but when you see it and hear it performed, it's like, it's like watching a foreign film, you know?
Truly. And, you know, it's one thing to say they're only doing Klingon, but once T'Kuvma switches over to English to speak with the Starfleet characters, it says so much. I mean, you know, the stereotype of the Klingon is, like, the drunken, swaggering buffoon is, like, this really says, like, oh, no, this is a tactician and a really smart, calculating guy, and just, like, the disdain, like, it's almost like the way he spoke English is, like, it's, like, beneath him.
Yes, yeah, he so hates the Federation and their sort of diverse ways. It sort of mirrors Beyond, right?
Yeah.
What was the bad guy's name?
Krall.
It kind of mirrors Krall's anger at the Federation. You know, he wants the Klingons to be pure, and he follows an ancient religious sect. I mean, there's definitely some real-world implications there. And it's kind of neat. I want to see how that gets explored more. But, there are a lot of Klingons. So who's the dude? Like, there's the kind of, like, all-white Klingon.
That would be Voke.
Voke.
Very mysterious.
Who's the one that Ken Mitchell plays?
That would be Cole.
Oh, yeah. All
he right. was only seen in a hologram tonight. He has two pieces of, I guess, paint striped on his face, tattoos maybe, and he was the antagonist. He was the one who was least willing to side with Takuvma.
Right, right. Okay, so Volk is like Takuvma's heir now.
He's the new torchbearer.
Right, right. And Mary Chifo's character is with them also.
She is what seems to be his lieutenant. They were together discussing, you know, have we won? Like, yeah, they're crippled, and she seems to be like his confidant. So
Volk's
confidant,
yeah.
No, Takuvma's confidant.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Well, so after, now that he's dead, or it's presumed to be dead anyhow.
Volk, it's kind of unclear what the role of the torchbearer is. I think it's a ceremonial. I mean, just the way the sarcophagus ship was presented and described by Saru, I think it was so evocative. He's like, some of the remains are thousands of years old. Some of them are just from hours ago. I was like, my God, like, this truly is world building for Klingons like we haven't seen in years.
Yeah, but also there were, you know, there were direct traces to the past. I mean, they talk about Kalis a lot.
Yes.
And it all kind of, my knowledge of Kalis, it was all, you know, was all legit. And they talk about, you know, how we haven't seen them in 100 years. That's reference to Enterprise and whatnot. It was not, you know, there wasn't too much of canon in this. You know, there's the scene when all the other ships show up, and I was like listening. Oh, are we going to hear a ship that we know? And they didn't mention any, I don't think. They mentioned, like, the Jaeger was one.
The Jaeger, that was really good. There was another, like, it's the kind of thing that Star Trek loves to do where they'll mention, like, two like made up names and then a name you know.
Right.
Like
right.
What's that Death Wish where it's like two no, a better example is the Savage Curtain, like there's Lieutenant Green
and
then there's Genghis Khan and Abraham Lincoln. So it's like you get a little bit of history and then there's the USS Jaeger. Like, oh, I know that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
The Klingons, I mean, the design of this sarcophagus ship, as it was called, is gorgeous. And then their beacon, which they didn't really have a name for.
Yeah. The ship looked really cool.
The way
they used the Klingon, the cloaking device, and sort of showed up out of nowhere and just smashed into the other ship. That was intense.
I love the revelation that Takuvma invented the cloaking technology. Like, no one else knew about it. And then he's like, Volk kind of blows up his spot. It's like, do you think, like, this guy, you didn't have this before, this guy? Which is interesting because Aaron from Trek Corps gave me an interesting little theory that maybe this Volk guy is not who he says he is.
Oh, he might be a Romulan.
He might be a plant, exactly.
Oh.
So he's son of none. We don't know what house
he's
from.
I love that. I am son of none, but I am heir to faith or something like that.
And he just holds his hand in the fist like Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver when his mind is snapped and he's just holding his hand in the fire. From that point on, he's the torchbearer.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very excited about Volk.
It was really cool. But, you know, again, another change. I mean, the Klingons look a lot different, but, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, that's the decision they made, and you got to deal with it, right?
Yeah, but you got guys like Glenn Hetrick and Neville Page designing them. Yeah. I mean, you got top quality thought put into not only the makeup, but the costumes, the set, the design, everything about it. It was just, you could tell.
2 minutes in, I didn't care. It looked really cool.
To use a Disney term, if you will, it's so immersive. Like, just looking at it for a second, I'm like, well, I'm there. This is that world. Like, it didn't feel phoned in any sense of the word.
No, it felt different, but it felt new, but it was, as you say, immersive, you know? I think, you know, I mean, there are still people out there that say, how come the Klingons look different in the old series than in the Next Generation? You know, it's like, ugh. And they want, you know, if you want to sit them down and talk about the augmentation virus, you can. But it's like, they just do. Just shut up. You know, it's what do you want from me? It's because they didn't have special effects like that back then. That's the answer, and we all know it.
And this is why we have memory beta and all of you know, your novels and your David Max and your comics. And this is why those things exist.
They'll come up with some kind of reason why they look different, but it has not presented itself yet. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't know. We didn't talk about, there was some other bridge crew on the Shenzhou. There's that one, like, cyborg dude.
Yeah.
And then there's somebody else that's got something on their fingertips, like some sort of metal
It made me think of Kohlrami, the Stratagema master. When they were playing Stratagema in TNG, they put their little fingertips in the little things. It's a little reuse of that.
And then there was somebody else that had like some sort of, just looked like headphones on their forehead.
Yeah. Well, so, Google Glass put right into your skull. Yeah.
So there's like, the, and I think that was the same guy with the stuff on his fingertips.
Yeah.
And then there was somebody else who, he looks like kind of a cyborg robot or whatever, and he does get blasted at one point.
They carry him off, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, rah, and he makes some kind of crazy noise.
Maybe it looked like a female cyborg? I couldn't really tell because we couldn't get a good look, but I thought I saw it looked like a female figure. Couldn't tell, but.
Yeah. And then there was one, I think it was the weapon specialist whose name was Gav.
Yes.
And is that a reference to the Tellarite Gav?
It's his stepson. It's his ward. It's the Tellarite's ward. Shout out Larry Nemechek, our Tellarite expert.
Yeah. Maybe it was. Maybe that much like Burnham is Sarek's ward. And it was fun. They didn't mention the when T'Kuv was screaming about the Federation. He was like, these disgusting humans and
filthy
Vulcans. Tellarites.
Andorians.
Filthy Andorians. Save the worst for last, which is nice. That little reference like does a lot, buys a lot of capital with me. It's like, all right, we maybe aren't going to see Andorians in this, but at least they're out there.
And when he says that line, he really sells it. I mean, something I'll say, I mean, I love Quark, one of my favorite characters. A lot of people's one of their favorite characters.
Sure,
but when you see those early episodes of DS9, I feel like you can really hear and feel him figuring out how to talk with that appliance in his mouth, that with that prosthetic in his mouth. I'm like, I can really hear it.
Yeah, he's shucking on it.
Yeah, you can really feel it. And a lot of the actors struggle with it. It's not just Armin Shimerman. Like, it's a tough thing to do, but I feel
the Grand Magus Zek always sounded horrible.
Yeah, like, just like so, I mean, Wallace Shawn's a genius, but he just so nasal and just like, it worked for that. But I feel like both the Chris Obi playing T'Kuvma, Mary Chifo playing Laurel, and the actor Voke, the actor who played Voke had a very foreign name. I can't remember off the top of my head, but excellent actor. It feels like they all like really were committed to it and sold it, and it made me think more of like how German sounds guttural to an American ear, as opposed to this sounds like an actor speaking through fake teeth.
Right, right. Yeah.
I was very taken. I think they all committed.
Oh my God, the teeth in this, the close-ups of the teeth.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, when you're watching it at home on your iPad, I mean, at the Cinerama Dome, those teeth were so cool.
Unbelievable.
So disgusting. But
so detailed.
Yeah. Man, all right, cool. So, we also saw a little clip that showed, like, it wasn't so much like next week on. It was like
This season on.
So I suspect it was, I don't know how, the whole thing was maybe 2 minutes or so. But it was like a little bit about what's going to happen in the next episode and then flashes from later on.
Predominantly, I want to assume episodes from, let's say, 3, 4, maybe 5 the deepest. It was very teasy. We see should we tease this a little bit?
No, let's not. Give it away. Yeah. I don't know.
It seemed very cool and very. It was a great little tease.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we can say is it implied that the next thing we're going to see is months, maybe even a year down the line.
This is serialized television. Yeah. Things in this pilot are going to, you know, come back. This isn't like, let's see what's out there. And then, like, you know, next week we're going to deal with some space slugs or whatever.
Orville. It's not the Orville.
No,
which I love, by the
way. Which I do, too, seriously. But
I think these first two episodes really felt like a prologue, a big prologue. Because if season three is, like I think it is, going to cut to 8 months later, just got loud. Bang Bang just started playing.
Yeah,
really loud.
Bang Bang. Jesse J is on the mic. Looks like they're setting up the colored lights. We're going to have some karaoke tonight, guys. And it looks like our treats are here.
Oh, my God. At the perfect timing. Wow. All right. Well, listen.
Yep, there's the pizza.
Adam, thank you, Elliot. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, a little Parmesan be great. Sure, why not? All right. Well, listen, Adam, thank you so much for joining us on this chat. I think that, you know, we could probably just talk about this for an hour and more, but I don't even know how long we've been talking. Let me put my light on here. It's very dark here in the Big Wangs.
Jordan, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, this was fun, and we got a lot more Star Trek to think about. It's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Guys, we're just in. The human adventure is just beginning.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.